So I've done over 2,000 events, but what's at the core of my events, and you guys know this better than anyone, is community. Like, it's more about the community, and I facilitate a phenomenal community through events. And there's a lot of responsibility when you're putting on an event, and the responsibility is to serve the educational needs of the community, the connectivity needs of the community, and at the same time to get rid of any negative people that don't belong within the community.
Welcome to Between Two Mics.
I'm Zach.
And I'm Rock.
We're the co-founders of Squadcast.fm.
The best way to record remote interviews in studio quality like this one.
Here on Between Two Mics, we explore the challenges, opportunities, and new ideas with the people who are pushing the limits of what's possible in podcasting. All right, so we are joined today by a good friend of ours and vanguard in the podcast community, Chris Kremitzos with PodFest. And I know you're part of She Podcast Live and all kinds of interesting stuff within the world of podcasting. So thank you for coming on the show, Chris.
Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, it's exciting times in our industry, and had a great time at PodFest this year in Orlando, Florida, and that was our second time. So I appreciate you taking a chance on us in early days and inviting us out for our first year. But I'm curious, like the event has evolved over time. You've evolved over time and are always kind of pushing the envelope forward. And then our industry is evolving. So I'm curious, like, out of, you know, all of these things evolving in parallel, how do you think about where PodFest has come from and where it's going?
So PodFest is a direct reflection of podcasting in that we started about 5 years ago with 100 people in a room. And then the next year, we kind of doubled that. The next year after that, we moved the event from Tampa to Florida. And we doubled again to like 373 people. And then the next year, we literally doubled again to 500 and change. And this past year, we hit close to 1,000. So the medium is growing. For those of us that knew about podcasting, we always knew it was something to recognize. But I think it's surprising to those of us been doing it for a while that how many more people are discovering it every day. So in the next 5 years, I have a feeling that I don't know if we'll be doubling, but we'll be growing by 50% as a conference, which means all these new tools will be coming out. A lot of venture capital money now is floating very freely within the audio space. So we're going to see a lot of experimentation, a lot of building up the audience. One of the key trends, I know you both have seen this, is people want to create the next Netflix of audio. I don't know if that's, I mean, we have SiriusXM, which is on-demand audio that people pay for. And I think now you could go back and listen on demand. So we already kind of have the Netflix of audio called SiriusXM. The rest is all experimentation of shows and networks. And what's really cool is anyone could compete. The people with the money, just because they have money, doesn't mean that they know anything more than someone without money. So it's interesting. Audio drama is an interesting space that I really like looking at because it's so creative. But we're going to see a lot of the universe of podcasting is like the galaxy. It keeps expanding and more stars are birthed every year. So I'm just excited to see what's around the corner and just be part of that through the conference.
I love that analogy, and audio drama, I think, you know, is something near and dear to my heart. And it was kind of, it's interesting. I hadn't really thought about it in these terms, but I think it was my wife who said it was like, it's kind of crazy that podcasting didn't really have fiction. At least to that degree before. It was all nonfiction. Imagine if the library or bookstore that were true for, or, you know, Netflix or whatever, like TV. So I think there's a whole nother half of this coin that is just starting to get like a glimpse of the edge. And it's exciting times to see what these creatives are able to put together. And the quality that they're producing content at is definitely like on par with paid content. So yeah, it's interesting this Netflix of audio conversation. And you know, we've had a chance to talk a little bit to the team at here in the Bay Area. I believe they're called Brew. They're a Y Combinator backed Netflix of audio kind of a style platform, and the folks at Luminary are making a lot of noise. So yeah, it's exciting times in that regard. We tend to focus more so on the creation and empowering creatives. And I think that's, you know, one of the things that spoke to me about PodFest is it's all about helping everybody, you know, like rising the tide for everybody and helping everybody in podcasting get to the next level of whatever that is. So a lot of that comes from the creativity that goes into and the work that goes into actually producing these things. So I'm curious about, like, do you guys divide up the agenda for podcasts by, like, you know, like creation and consumption, or like, do you focus on one more than the other? How's that factored in?
Yeah. So you have your, there's a large group of business owners that are always learning podcasts. So that's always there at a conference like ours. And then we have artists that are more what I call purists. They just want to create some really cool shows. That's what I would call more the audio drama side. And then you have your health and wellness, you know, yoga, meditations. And then you have your science shows, your government shows, your comedy shows, your kid-based children's learning shows. There's so many different, and these are just a few. Yeah, these are just a few off the top of my head. So the main thing for Mike, what I want to do when we put on PodFest is, if someone's a beginner, I don't want them to feel guilty that they don't know how to do anything. So we have a startup workshop. We have exhibitors like yourselves that will, like, walk them through, here's how you do stuff. So they feel empowered to get started. And we are very fortunate in that we're this weird conference where a lot of our beginners get started very quickly. I know you both have seen that. And they celebrate, like, hey, I just launched my podcast. And it's because we make it relatable, and then we celebrate a lot of the screw-ups that our veteran podcasters make. It's celebrated in our newsletter, it's celebrated up on stage, so it takes the sting out of, like, what if I forget to record? You know, what happens if, I don't have the right mic or whatever? So that takes the fear out of it. So we have all these workshops and all these different things, but I'm excited, very much like you. I got to meet a lot of the audio drama people out at a conference in Seattle called PodCon that just shut down. They're no longer doing it. But I was able to build really... Yeah, I built a lot of good inroads, though. So we're going to be bringing a lot of those individuals to our event. So we will have a full audio drama track. We also do YouTube, which is unique. We have a full YouTube video track. It's under the VidFest umbrella. So there's a lot going on at PodFest, and there's something for everyone. But the key is finding the right speakers. So I travel around the country trying to find the best of the best.
So it's going to be no surprise to our listeners that we are fanboys of PodFest, Chris Kremitzos, you know, everything that you're doing. I mean, we have a great time every year. You know, you can certainly just send us the bill, and it'll be paid for by the next event happens. But when did you find out that you wanted to be you know, basically running events, throwing events to these degree? Because I got to think behind the scenes, and you never show it at these events. You're always really engaged, and, you know, you're definitely busy, but you're not like, you don't look like a chicken with its head cut off. But I got to imagine there's so much work and prep and stress and just, like, so much that goes into it. So, you know, take us behind the scenes of what that's like a little bit. And then also just, like, how did this start?
So my background in events started in my late 20s. I loved doing production, so I got involved with making TV shows at Public Access TV. And at the time, you could do, I don't know if Public Access is still around, but you could do TV and put on cable television. And that was a good trial run of putting on a live show. And I remember my first live hour of TV, my two guests ran out of material within 5 minutes. And if you don't know what that means I have 55 minutes left to fill with two people giving me yes and no answers. And luckily I figured it out, but that's like, if you want to talk about, I can't talk about all the worst case things I've been through, but I've been through, like, the worst that could happen to you. Like, a guest canceling on you is not even close to worse. Like, for me, like, I've had 10 times worse than that.
Well, it sounds like those guests canceled on you during the interview. They just said, yeah, we're done.
during a live interview where you can't say, let's tape this and come back later on TV, streaming on channel 19. So, that was amazing. I thank God for call-ins. I somehow figured out how to get call-ins, and I just would talk to the people calling in. And that's how I was able to eat up the time. But so I've done over 2,000 events, but what's at the core of my events, and you guys know this better than anyone, is community. Like, it's more about the community, and I facilitate a phenomenal community through events. And there's a lot of responsibility when you're putting on an event, and the responsibility is to serve the educational needs of the community, the connectivity needs of the community, and at the same time, to get rid of any negative people that don't belong within the community. And there's different ways to do that, but over time, I've built up a lot of techniques and hacks to do it well. So PodFest happened about 5 years ago when I was doing my Tampa Bay business owner's full-time gig. We used to do about 100 events a year, and I was doing PodFest as my creative outlet. So I deal with business owners, so most of these people would suit and tie. And then here was this one thing a year where we could all wear T-shirts and shorts and show up, and we're all podcasters. So it was like a breath of fresh air for me. There came a time where I fell in love more with my podcasting conference, and I sold the business side. And I was like, I'll just grow this. And over time, we were able to really grow PodFest to where it is now. But there's growth pains. Like, as you guys know, we have a full functioning trade show. That comes with its own growing pains. And what I'm really proud of is we probably do one of the best jobs on the planet of connecting our community to the trade show to where it's a privilege for them to go visit the vendors. And that takes a lot of work. And then, agreed. You know, with Jonathan Oakes, we did trivia night. We had Trivial Warfare night the night before we started. So all of a sudden, everybody's getting to know each other like family. The next day, we have what we call the strategic alliance, where everybody's treated equally and they get to network with one another. So there's a lot of connectivity that goes on that's probably, even though I'm a big education buff, it's more powerful than the education, because now it's like, oh, I know Zach and Rock. If I need help, I could always talk to them. That's a big deal. Like, you might get people to ask you something throughout the year because they feel comfortable asking you that. And that's because of everything that we do within the event. So I take what I do very seriously, and it's not a hobby to me. So therefore, when you show up, you see the impact. Of an event works like a pressure cooker. The closer you get to the event, the more pressure there is right up to the event. So when the event happens, I'm the calmest you'll ever see me is during the event, because I've trained myself to be that, because I used to be the chicken with no head. There's no fun running an event and not being able to enjoy it. So I slow down time when we're doing the event. That being said, there's emergencies that happen 24/7 when you're running an event, and you just have to have a good team to delegate it out to while you're running that event. So we had one room this past year, I don't know why, but it was running hot, like a temperature hot, one of the breakouts. Another room was running way too cold. So these are things that we found out, unfortunately, a little later than I would have liked. So now we have to put a plan in place next year that those things are fixed instantly within 5 or 10 minutes. So these are the things that, as an event organizer, most people don't see, but I deal with behind the scenes.
Yeah, there's I'm sure, you know, a thousand or a million.
Yeah, that's just one
examples.
Or two off the top. Yeah. I could go down the list, but I don't want to bore you guys or scare anyone from not doing events. But it's insane. It's insane. You know, you could have a speaker that was confirmed late, and they're not featured in the newsletter. Mm-hmm. Okay, well, that speaker will come up to you. Like, let's say I'm in a room running the event. They might come bum rush you during the event and start yelling at you. Like, that's something that can happen. We're dealing with over 200 speakers. So right. 1% margin of error, that means two people could get forgotten, even though they're on the agenda, their picture's not featured there. So those are the things you try and avoid, but they do happen.
Yeah, a bunch of type A's, you know, like up there doing
correct.
Their thing.
If a speaker, for the most part, is a type A to begin with. Luckily, right. I was able to diffuse the one situation that happened, and that person became a really good friend of mine. But if you're not calm and you're stressed, that situation is just, it's made yeah. for, it's like shaking a can of soda and exploding. There's no point in doing that.
Yeah. And like what you just said about, you know, turning those kind of awkward or painful moments around into, you know, positive things and eventually connections and, you know, maybe superpowers down the line. That is something that I don't think it's discussed a lot. And I think to be, you know, somebody in your position with the different levels of community that you operate, we should touch on the Facebook group aspect of it, because that's kind of the glue for the rest of the year. But you know, being able to turn those situations around is how do you think about that? I mean, it's kind of a necessity in your role or in somebody like in my role of trying to get better at it, Aspire, but you have been inspiring to me because I've seen a little bit of that. So how do you think about those situations, like turning those negative possibilities into positives?
Yeah, so we live in a world where we get instant feedback, whether we like it or not, right? So I'll give you an example. In my business community, if someone was upset with me, they would call us or they would email us. In the PodFest community, which is you're dealing with the general public, if they're upset with you, they're going to post it on Facebook before you even see it. You might be sleeping when it happens. So you have to have a really great community, because what will happen, they'll send you a private text saying, hey, Chris, someone posted something they're not happy about. You might not have seen it. And that does happen from time to time. And then you want to answer it either publicly. You want to let them know that you're on it or that you apologize. Whatever they're looking for is taking a little longer than they thought. You just have to always be 24/7 available for your audience and them knowing you care. And that person might be a negative, but everybody's watching, you're interacting with that person. And that's what really counts. Like, you might have someone that's just a neg, but the way you treat them is how everybody understands how you're going to treat them. So you want to make sure to get on those things. And, you know, in the beginning, I used to be like, man, this guy didn't even call me or email me, and they're slamming me online without asking. And it was their mistake because they didn't know how to put a coupon code or something, right? So now I've accepted that we live in a world where we're so lazy, we just are going to post it publicly because it's easier to do that. Some of us. So you gotta roll with the punches. It's just the nature of business. And that's kind of how it goes now.
Who's got bad things to say about you, man?
Yeah, very rarely, but believe it, customer service stuff happens. And if we don't, let's say it comes into one of my mail, like for instance, they might not go to the PodFest mailbox to send it. They might send it to me directly. I'm capped with Facebook friends, so it goes in that extra folder and you don't see it. So these things happen nowadays because I'm not a big LinkedIn user, but someone might have sent me a LinkedIn message. Everybody sends it. And I always say, please send it to my email. I'll take care of it beforehand, but send me an email. And a lot of times they're like, I don't know where your email is. It's just easier to go on social media. So just accepting the realities of the landscape. We do live in a 24/7 instant gratification world. So that's the kind of level of service we need to give to our customers.
Yeah, no, I think we've learned some of those lessons, and I appreciate your insights there. But customer service is definitely, you know, at the heart of you can see it. It comes through like proactive, not reactive, right? Like, you can tell that there's a level of thought put into the events that you've organized. And that's why I'm so glad, you know, and it's refreshing even to go into the podcast community that you've helped foster on Facebook, which is vibrant and active and educational and for the most part, very positive. So I'm curious, like, I really doubt that. Did you start PodFest with that group in mind, or did somebody just kind of, I know your partner, John Dennis, had his own group, I believe, the Podcasters Hangout, or how did that shake out?
So I started the Florida Podcast Association to help local podcasters. And then out of that, we started a national conference called PodFest. John was an attendee, and I would give him a booth at the time for his group, Podcasters Hangout. So then over time, I needed help with the technical aspects. So I brought him on as a minority shareholder to help facilitate a lot of the technical aspects as the business scaled up, because I knew that would be a challenge. So basically, that's how that all happened. This past year, we still had a challenge with the app. You know, we had an app that we had a challenge with. So the cool thing is I just record everything online and I put it up on the Facebook group so everybody can know what the schedule is. So you just got to use the tech that you have and think outside the box when things aren't working 100%, you know. But we're what the key of our conference is that the community is taken care of, that they collaborate with one another and they care for each other. And that shows up when you look at the interaction in the groups. Like, people know each other and they help each other differently than a lot of the other groups that have a lot more people, but they're asking random questions. When you see questions on our groups, everybody knows each other. You can just tell by the interactions. It's a little bit different in the
vibe.
Interactivity.
No,
yeah, you see it in what people are celebrating and how they're interacting with each other. And I just want to expand on that, you know, community vibe that we have going, which is very special.
Very special indeed. And you know, so special. You're also a filmmaker. You know, you had the Messengers podcast. So how does that add to the Chris K portfolio, CK Productions portfolio, and what was that like producing that film?
Yeah, in year two, I got tired of people asking, because I would speak all over the state for the most part back then, and I got tired of people asking me, I don't see what podcasting is. And I was like, we got to make a visual for these people because I'm explaining it to them and they still don't understand it. So I commissioned a movie, got my boy Neil Gilarte behind it, who's a filmmaker, and we traveled the country to film what is podcasting? Why are these people doing this thing with microphones and audio? And that movie was really well received. We had, I don't know exactly how many, but I'm going to guess over 10,000 people have watched that movie from Amazon and iTunes. And it's been an amazing ride to watch people like grasp the movie. And then I've gotten emails from people thanking me because their dad didn't understand what they did for a living, and they're able to share with them that movie. So it's been a great tool for us to help people. So I created that movie for one basic thing, to give the medium of podcasting a visual representation. And I was going to make a Messengers 2, but after we did some initial shooting, I just don't, there is a story as far as more money coming into the space, but there's not a story of like, what is podcasting? Why are people podcasting? So I think we captured it in the first one. Might do some short YouTube clips, but that's about it.
Oh, so there isn't going to be a Messengers 2 coming up?
More than likely, because it'll take a year of my life, and I haven't seen an arc of a story there. So that's why we did the preliminary shooting. We need more of an arc. We can make the same movie, but that's not the point of a movie. So before you invest a year of your life, you got to make sure you have something to say. So we might just take those clips and make a really nice YouTube montage of mini stories out of it.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, we actually were shooting a video on, you know, what to do with content, you know, other ways to be creative with your content, you know, plan B's and C's to do with stuff. So that's going to be a great use, I'm sure. Cause I know, you got some good film in there. I believe Harry has some film in there. So
we got a lot. Yeah. Poor Harry. I had to tell him while he was speaking at Outlier. He was like, oh, Messengers 2 coming out. And I started laughing and I felt bad. I was like, that's not coming. It's not coming. I think he thought I was joking. I was like, no, it's not coming out. I felt bad reacting that way, but I was laughing cause it was like, nah, that's not happening. But I hadn't told him, so I didn't realize that at that time.
That's funny.
Yeah, and you're part of, you know, PodFest is a huge deal and is a great thing for our community. So that is, you would think, enough for Chris K, but no, making movies and then also helping other people, you know, start or grow their events. And in one way or another, I know, you know, you mentioned PodCon. It sounds like you attend a lot of these events and you speak at a lot of these events, but then you're also helping folks behind the scenes get new events started. And I know, you know, the privilege to be part of in some small way, the She Podcast Live was something that you reached out to us with recently. And that's very exciting to see the momentum from the Kickstarter campaign, the community on Facebook that, you know, that Jessica and the team have, Jessica and Elsie have put together over the course of years of growing that. So just to see that momentum carry on and kind of be embodied now in this, or going to be embodied from kind of the digital community into the real world is awesome and inspiring. So what can you tell us kind of how the thinking there, at what point I don't know if you helped out with the Kickstarter campaign, at what point you started helping out there?
Yeah, so Jessica had come to me and she said, hey, I'm thinking of doing a live event. Can you help me? I said, sure. You know, I'll consult on this project for you. Let's do a Kickstarter. We launched the Kickstarter at PodFest. And her goal was 20. I stretched her goal from what she wanted, but I said, hey, let's go make a goal to hit 25,000 in pre-sold tickets and virtual passes and all that stuff. She said, what if no one buys? I go, well, then we don't do an event. I go, you know what I mean? There's no skin off your back. She goes, okay. So about 10 days out, we hit that goal. And then I said, okay, now let's go for 150% of goal. We wound up hitting 200% of goal with over $50,000 raised. And it was one of the top, you know, crowdfunded things for a podcast event ever. So we're excited about that. There'll be at least 500 women at the first ever She Podcast Live. And this is a community that's online that has over 12,000 members that's been around for 5 years. So I have a feeling that the podcast community is going to have three big signature events. Podfest, which is what I run, Podcast Movement, which Dan and Jared run, and She Podcast Live. Those are going to be the three big, what I would call industry events for podcasting. And those events are all going to get bigger and bigger over time. Then you have smaller regional events that are going to play out. And those people have, I don't know if you guys saw, but there's a PodX that just happened in Nashville.
Yeah.
They were billed that they were going to have 5,000 people. It was going to be amazing. They brought all these people. From what I heard, they only had 100 people there. So, you know, understand the medium and the community going into before you try and launch an event. So I don't know how much they invested, but they were expecting a convention center full of people, and they only had 100 people show up.
Sounds like it's the old, if you build it, they will come kind of logic that doesn't always work.
Yeah, and they didn't get any local support, which Nashville has. It was in Nashville. Nashville has a huge group of podcasters. Had they had them behind them, they would have had at least 200 or 300. But they were billing at the thousands. Now, if you think about it, if you did a first-time event and you had 200 to 300 people, that's a huge success. But success is only as good as what you frame it as. So when you frame it that you're going to have 5,000 people, and let's say they only got 1,000 people, it's still a failure. So they set the bar kind of high on that event, and they didn't hit it.
Well, that's too bad. And, you know, like Zach mentioned, you attend a lot of these events and you speak at a lot of these events. I noticed that a lot of your talks tend to be around understanding the millennial mindset, or like dealing with millennials in the workforce. What's that about? That's something I didn't really know about you until, you know, looking you up more, and it's not hard to relate to you.
Yeah. So the millennial thing is, when I go out to corporate groups, a lot of times they don't understand millennials, and most people like to rag on them. It's one of the largest generations we've ever had. In some aspects, depending on how you look at it, they're larger than the baby boomers. But I think they have a bum rap in being lazy, no good for nothing, you know, basement dwelling individuals that are sucking off the teats of their parents. Now, there might be a percentage that's true, but the majority are probably some of the hardest working, plugged in 24/7, wanting to live a life full of experiences, not accumulating things. So I think that's a really great area for me to dispel a lot of rumors. And I have a friend that he builds skyscrapers. He's a commercial guy, and he will buy buildings and build buildings. He literally has to build his buildings now, so the millennial workforce would approve of the building. And I said, why is that? He goes, because if the millennials will not come work here, the employers have no employees. So this is the first time in history that buildings are being built for the employees rather than the employers. Because the employers, if you look at just recent history, what do they build? They build a cube farm and stick you in a little cubicle. You know, right. We even have names for it. Cubicle, offical. You know, you got the corner offical. I mean, it just sounds awful. We have office space making fun of that culture. That culture doesn't exist anymore, really. It's a dying culture. The new culture is creating a workplace for an experience. Like my friend in downtown Tampa, he has a building. He had to put in, he chose to do this. He's a very smart man. But he put in better lighting, 24-hour gym. He has a Suburban that drives people around town if they need to go do quick trips. So basically a free Uber that comes with the building. And I said, how do you afford that? He goes, it's the same security. We have two security guards. One of them could go drive people around town if they need it. It's only, you know, a 10 block radius to get them around. So we need to really understand. Think of Elon Musk, right? He's older. He was Generation X, but think of him as a millennial mindset. He's a rule breaker. Think about a few million people that think like him, and think about the revolution they're about to put out to the world. That's what we're going to be living through, the greatest time of invention and innovation that we've ever seen before. And people are not like when I was a little kid, you're lucky if you had 3 or 4 color choices for your bathroom. Maybe you had 5. Maybe you went from like the lime green, the pink. This was World War II era, to like 5 more choices. Now you could customize your bathroom any way you want. So we're living in a world of choices, and those choices will bring new possibilities to our lives. That's for me, I'm excited about audio, but I'm also excited about video. I'm excited about YouTube. I'm excited about all of us communicating. The reason why I love events is because you bring innovators together. Well, guess what? you guys will learn from others and they'll learn from you and new things will come out of that. So it's really exciting to see the world being really, revolutionary in many different ways.
This conversation has been fascinating, but I think you'd be very hard pressed to find anybody in the podcast industry that has their finger on the pulse of what's going on more than Chris Kay. So I really want to extend our gratitude for welcoming us with open arms into the community that you've created, into the broader community, and then also, you know, being a mentor for us when we need it with questions or just kind of new ways to look at things. You're always got fresh eyes. So bigger picture, all of those things. Thank you, Chris Kay.
Yeah. Thank you. Hey guys, I'm excited to watch you grow Squadcast. And we talked about this before we got on this call. I get rave reviews at my groups, even the small community groups, which is where you hear the truth always. And they love your customer service. They love that anytime that there's a challenge, you guys fix it and you're on it and you're always in communication. They love the ease of use. So keep building what you're building. And it's cool that you're using your own tool to spread the word, like with the podcast. But I think Squadcast is going to help hundreds of thousands, if not millions of people, the way you guys are going. So keep up the great work.
Thank you so much, Chris.
Thanks, guys.
This has been another episode of Between Two Mics with Zach and Rock from Squadcast.
The best way to record remote podcast interviews like today's in studio quality.
Visit bit.ly/squadpod to check out our resources page where you can download your free remote interview checklist.